Hey, you're listening to the Words on Flick show with me, Janine Coveney. You're listening to the Words on Flick show on eWater Radio, KEWR.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR, DB, or its affiliates.
All right. Welcome to the Words on Flick show. I've got two very, very special guests, my dear friends and brothers, A. Scott Galloway and Tony Gaspard. And I'm really juiced up to talk about Crescent City Celluloid. This month's Words on Flick show explores movies set in and around the great city of New Orleans. And we know that the city has numerous monikers, including the Crescent City, the City That Care Forgot, the Big Easy, and some people just call it NOLA because it's New Orleans, Louisiana. It's the city of food, magic, music, and mystery. And I'm really excited because New Orleans is a place that I happen to love for several reasons. One, it's a city that's steeped in history, where the melting pot of America's ethnic origins really got stirred up in terms of Black, White, Native American, and mixed race people. You have the influences from Spain, France, the African continent, Haiti, Cuba in the mix, which the food, the music, the spiritual practices, and the architecture. So it's a city whose soul is filled with music and respect for musicians and artists who walk a different path. I've also heard it called the northernmost Caribbean city because it does have those island influences and climate. So when you walk the streets of the French Quarter, it's easy to feel like you're in Europe or you're in a previous century. And it's also a place, as you guys know, that values a good time because they always say, laissez le bon temps rouler, let the good times roll. And then you've got the concept of l'agnap, which is getting a little something extra for free. Yeah. So it's a place of alchemy and magic. And I just find that fascinating. You were raised in that area, so you're the perfect person to have on the show.
You just described my childhood.
So the other thing that I know that we talked about is how it is now considered Hollywood South for a lot of special reasons, because a lot of movies are made there and set there.
That is correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. So when I go visit my family, I see trucks all around and crews, and it looks like I'm in California and LA and Hollywood. So it's changed a lot, and I'm glad it's getting the recognition it deserves, because I mean, if you walk around the French Quarter and just the city, it looks like a Hollywood backdrop. So I'm glad they're utilizing that.
Yeah, it's a really special place. And Scott, you and I know that because you and I were fortunate enough to be invited on a journalist junket to New Orleans for the Satchmo Fest celebrating Louis Armstrong. But that was way back in August of 2005. And that was just weeks before Hurricane Katrina. And though I'd been to New Orleans many times before that, that trip remains one of my most memorable in the Crescent City. And I really haven't been back since. So do you remember that trip?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was my first trip to New Orleans. And it was wonderful to be doing that and hanging out with you for that. We went to so many different things, restaurants, clubs, the Quarter, parade costume manufacturers, record stores, and I was just fascinated. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to come back here. And I did. But, mere weeks afterwards was, Hurricane Katrina. And oh my goodness, that was it was heartbreaking. It really was, because we saw so much of it, and so much of it was destroyed right after we were there.
The changes to me are not great. I mean, it's still the places where I grew up and where my family lives are still underdeveloped. I mean, still to today. And a lot of the major retailers have not come back. Shopping is still very limited. The homes are not being built back up. So, I mean, this is outside of what the tourists see, the real New Orleans. Still, it breaks my heart to see what it's turned into since then. It's a lot going on, a lot not going on as well, I should say, that it should be. And I don't know what it's going to take for it to turn it around, but no one's trying, which is it's heartbreaking. It really is.
I think that the spirit remains strong. I mean, they've continued to have their festivals, their music festivals, the parades. Mardi Gras has come back. And fortunately, so many of its traditions have been captured on celluloid.
My flag boy and your flag boy sitting by the fire. My flag boy to your flag boy, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. Talking about here now, here now, here now.
So I'm going to start with one that everybody knows, and that is a streetcar named Desire
Hey, Stella!
from 1951, which was directed by Aaliyah Kazan, based on a hit Tennessee Williams play. It's one of those classic dramas featuring method actor Marlon Brando in one of his most acclaimed roles. And I think what is most New Orleans about this picture is really the French Quarter apartment inhabited by Stanley Kowalski and his wife Stella, played by Kim Hunter. It's like a second floor garden apartment in a courtyard inside a gate with a garden, and then the apartments are kind of clustered around it. It's got those fancy iron balustrades and shuttered windows inside. And so we see Blanche Dubois, played by Vivien Leigh, Stella's sister. She comes for an unfortunate visit after hiding the fact that she was run out of a country town for her loose living after an emotional breakdown.
Yes, I have had many meetings with strangers.
And so many people know this movie. She won an Academy Award for it. But all she wants is beauty, fantasy, music, and romance. And I identify with that. And I feel like those things are so part of the mystique of New Orleans, right? Beauty, fantasy, music, and romance. It's an intense picture. So, what's on your list?
Well, I wanted to start with a television program, and Tony's going to relate to this as well, because we were both very big fans of the TV show WKRP in Cincinnati. And after that wonderful radio-oriented show closed out, the Black lead character, Tim Reed, had his own program produced by the same gentleman that produced WKRP in Cincinnati, which was Hugh Wilson. It was a really incredible television program called Frank's Place.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans when that's where you left your heart? There's something more. I miss the one I care for more than I miss New Orleans.
Took place in New Orleans, and all about a man, very well-to-do, respectable, intelligent Black man who was a professor at Brown University. He inherits a restaurant in New Orleans and doesn't really have any intention of staying there.
Frank, some of the employees here, mainly Tiger, Anna May, and Big Arthur, have gone to the bank and secured a small business loan. And they were wondering if perhaps you would be inclined in any way to sell them the restaurant.
Well, I have to look things over first. Kind of see what's what.
Sure.
Get the lay of the land.
Absolutely.
And then I think I'd be glad to sell them the restaurant.
You promise?
Oh, I promise.
Well, give me a hug!
But of course, with so many things in New Orleans, there has to be some voodoo spell, whatever. So I forget who put a spell on the place or him, but it basically rendered him not able to go back and teach at Brown University. It was destined for him to come and run that restaurant, the family thing. And as you both well know, because you're very good friends of mine, I don't watch a lot of television now, but back in those days, I did watch a lot. It started to really taper off, and this was one of the last programs, along with the Paper Chase, that I literally would run home on Monday nights to be sure to see it. I videotaped it. I have every episode on VHS, and I just love the mood of it. I love the fact that it was contemporary, yet it was set in a place that was so full of tradition, as you said, Janine. You know, and there's a lot of cultural history. I think the episode that always stands out in my mind, and I believe Ron O'Neill, the great actor who is best known for playing Superfly on Celluloid, played a character. He was the head of a social club. And this is where we learned about the brown bag situation, where if your skin was darker than a paper bag, you could not be a part of this club. And, you know, I was young when I saw this show, so that was really eye-opening. I mean, I think that show came out, I was still a teenager, and I was like, what? You know, you know, the show had romance, it had great casting, Tim and his real-life wife, Daphne Maxwell Reed, and lots of great guest stars, and there was humor, and there was great music. There was no laugh track, and it was shot with only one camera. You know, it wasn't a 2-3 camera situation. It was one camera, but it was a true element of realism going on with that show as well. So I remember it fondly, and I think other than a couple of horror movies that I'll mention later, you know, that was really kind of my first taste of New Orleans, particularly contemporary, and not in some spooky voodoo context.
Yeah. You know, they captured the essence of New Orleans at that time. And just from the area, I think the area where I grew up in the 7th and 8th Ward, it was pretty much based around that area. And growing up in that area and watching the show, I'm like, okay, I'm watching my family. You know, or I know what they're talking about. I know these places and these social clubs and everything that they talked about. So it was, they did a great job doing their research and capturing that. So kudos to them. Yeah.
I also loved Frank's Place. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's such a fleeting show. It was like here and it was gone.
One season.
I think it was based around Leah Chase's restaurant, Dookie Chase.
Oh, Dookie Chase. Yeah. Yeah. When you go to New Orleans, you got to go to Dookie Chase. It's not only great food, it's a historic place.
Yes.
Yeah. Is. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for that. I'm going back in time once again to 1965. I just saw this movie recently on TCM, which is my favorite Turner Classic Movies, which is The Cincinnati Kid.
The Cincinnati Kid. His luck is a temptation to every woman, and his luck is a challenge to every gambling man.
I don't need marked cards to beat you, pal.
Directed by Norman Jewison and starring Steve McQueen, Carl Malden, Edward G. Robinson, a young Rip Torn, and Margaret as a femme fatale, as only she can be. Tuesday Weld as the simple country girl who loves Steve McQueen. And the film was adapted from a novel, surprise, surprise, and is kind of it's almost like a Depression era Western style showdown between McQueen's character, Eric Stoner, who's a young, cocky stud poker player, and an older, established king of the poker world, Lancey Howard, played by Edward G. Robinson. And in some ways, that plot, that setup kind of echoes The Hustler with Paul Newman and Jackie Gleason from 1961, except their game was pool. So you've got the new generation, the hot kid in town trying to challenge and best the older generation in skill. And not to spoil the ending, but it just kind of cuts off and he's, you know, back to square one. But the most New Orleans thing about this movie is that the film, of course, starts with scenes of a New Orleans funeral second line march. And if you don't know that much about New Orleans, it is below sea level and is prone to flooding, as we learned from Katrina. It's basically a bowl. And so most of the city's dead are buried above ground. So that's what makes its cemeteries so picturesque and fantastic, because they have all these memorials that are above ground. And you see that in this second line opening to the movie. You know, New Orleans has its own spiritual practices and traditions and music. And not only do you see that, it's true to its location because it shows the fancier hotels of the French Quarter. Even though this is the 1930s, it's set in the 1930s during the Depression. You see a ferry ride with Jackson Square Park and the spires of St. Louis Cathedral in the background. And it shows us a down and dirty cockfight attended by a cross-section of the city's inhabitants. And it's really down and dirty. Like, even Anne Margaret's in there, like, yeah, everybody's in there sweating, looking at these crazy roosters fighting. So I highly recommend the movie because it's one of Steve McQueen's best portrayals and because it embodies the spirit of New Orleans so much.
My next one goes to the area that I alluded to earlier, which is more of the horror voodoo cross with straight up satanic things in this particular picture. It's Alan Parker, the late great Alan Parker's Angel Heart.
I'm a private detective paid to snoop around.
He's dead, Mr. Angel.
Well, you know what they say about slugs. They always leave slime in their tracks. Are you afraid?
Yeah, I'm afraid.
And again, I saw this when I was really young, and I just remember it being kind of clever as well as dark. You know, Robert De Niro playing a character, the name Lou Cipher. And I'll never forget beautiful Lisa Bonet in this movie and the name that she had, which was Epiphany Proudfoot. Who's going to forget a name like that?
So it's
Epiphany.
Yeah. Your mama left you with a very beautiful name, Epiphany.
It was a controversial picture. It was a kind of a neo-noir, dark horror picture, basically. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I'm probably going to be pulling it out soon because of this from my Laserdisc collection. But it was a real standout for me. And it's one of the first things I thought about when you asked me to join you for anything New Orleans-oriented. You know, this movie captures, you know, voodoo rituals. It captures, you know, that whole spirit of spell casting and the undead and Satan's rule over all of that. And again, really great performances from Mickey Rourke, Lisa Bonet, and Robert De Niro. Actually, Robert De Niro's role was actually kind of, I wouldn't call it a cameo, but it was a smaller role compared to everyone else, but so riveting, you know, as basically Satan on Earth. So don't have a whole lot to say about it other than that. And of course, they had a very controversial sex-oriented scene that they had to cut 10 minutes out of to get it an R rating. But of course, in the realm of home video and all that, there was the unrated version that, of course, sold way more copies than the edited one.
Was that during her stint on The Cosby Show or after she left?
During her stint, I believe, and it caused a lot of problems with Cosby, who felt like it didn't fit her image. He was very upset with her about that film.
So it didn't fit the image that he needed and wanted her to have because she was a main character on his squeaky clean 8 o'clock at Thursday's sitcom. And so, yeah, he didn't appreciate her being in that movie at all. But, you know, Lisa always proved to be somebody who did her own thing, whether it be marrying Lenny Kravitz or to, you know, other pictures that get down the line beyond Angel Heart. You know, you weren't going to box her in. So that just was folks that didn't need to be really working together. But she was much younger. Bill Cosby was a veteran, a millionaire. He had that show. And I think her role was subsequently diminished until she was off of the set. Yeah. Angel Heart, you know, never forget it. Big impact when I was a kid.
That movie is one of those, because Janine does not like movies that have anything to do with Satan. Okay. Right. If Satan or voodoo or anything is involved, like, I'm out. But I do recognize that her character and the things that happen in the movie are highly reflective of a lot of New Orleans values and beliefs in some quarters.
And kudos to Alan Parker, because I mean, after that, he did Mississippi Burning, he did The Commitments, he did Evita starring Madonna. He was always doing some very interesting films, none of them like the one before. Just wanted to give him a shout out of respect, because he used his time behind the camera very well.
Well, once again, I'm going to go back to 1962. Now, look, I was a mere tot. I only saw this movie, I would say I saw this movie about 10 years ago for the first time, and it's called A Walk on the Wild Side, not to be confused with the Lou Reed song. This movie was adapted from a novel by Nelson Algren. It stars Lawrence Harvey, who was pivotal to the original Manchurian Candidate. And it also stars the French model Capucine, a young Jane Fonda, and Baxter, who was known for Moses, Moses, Moses in the Ten Commandments. And also, Scott, you just saw her because you watched All About Eve for the first time.
Yes. So
Anne Baxter is a monster. The movie also has the incomparable Barbara Stanwyck, who ruled over so many movies from the 40s and 50s. This is sheer 1930s pulp fiction in black and white. Okay, so the main story involves a Texas cowboy named Dove Linkhorn, who hitchhikes to New Orleans in search of his lost love, Hallie. And along the way, he teams up with this young runaway who's also hitchhiking to New Orleans named Kitty Twist, who is Jane Fonda. But what he doesn't know is that his lost love, Hallie, played by Capucine, is now the main attraction at a French Quarter brothel called the Dollhouse. And the Dollhouse is overseen by this evil madam, Barbara Stanwyck, who's actually in love with her. So it's hard to tell from the movie, I've never read the book, if these two women have actually consummated a relationship or if it's just that Joe, who is the madam, has designs on Hallie and is trying to control her. But I'm thinking they probably did, because Joe is really, really controlling and evil. So Hallie reunites with Dove, but at first she doesn't tell him that she's a prostitute. And of course, he wants to marry her and everything. And she's like, I don't know. I have things to tell you. I'm not the same person I used to be, blah, 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 all of that stuff. You know, she's actually kind of comfortable at the Dollhouse. Like, she has a lot of freedom to do what, I mean, she's bored with all the men, but, you know, she gets to do what she wants to do. And she has a nice little room in one of those classic garden apartments with the gate where you come into the garden and there's all the rooms for all the ladies of the night around. And then they have a nice little lounge with the black piano player, you know, which we've heard all the stories about ragtime and jazz being born in the brothels of New Orleans from those entertainment parlors. Anyway, there's another woman named Teresita, played by Anne Baxter, who is also in love with Dove. And so she knows he's in love with this girl, and he helps him in his quest to find her. So the movie is like juicy, gritty, down and dirty, noir stuff, as much as they can show after the code, you know, which prohibits sexual content and violence and all of that stuff. But it's also got a Elmer Bernstein title song that is performed by Brooke Benton.
You'll walk on the wild side. The devil is waiting. He's waiting to take your hand.
There's this great opening credit sequence created by the well-known animator Saul Bass, featuring this black cat. This black cat is just walking along as the music is going. And so there was a jazzy all organ version of that song, Walk on the Wild Side. I want to say it's Jimmy Smith, right? It was a big chart hit in the 60s, and it was a staple in my house.
Walk on the wild side.
And so I'd always heard the song and I'd been curious about the movie that went with it. And, you know, spoiler alert, unfortunately, the prostitute doesn't quite make it out of the picture alive. Mm. But that goes in keeping with all of those movie tropes about tramps with a heart of gold and prostitutes and, you know, women of ill repute. They have to pay for their transgressions. And if this movie is on TV or on TCM, I gotta watch it because it's such a pot boiler and it's so dirty. But, you know, Jane Fonda is evil, but she's so pretty, and Cappuccino is gorgeous. And of course, Lawrence Harvey with his English accent. I don't know how he got to play all these American cats. Like, he's a cowboy. Like, really? He's talking like this, you know. Oh, Hallie, I love you. You're a Texas cowboy, really? But anyway. I love this movie. It is totally New Orleans because it's got that grit to it.
The one I want to talk about is a great segue to that one. 1982's Cat People.
Mm.
Directed by Paul Schrader. Yeah, by Paul Schrader, starring Natasha Kinski. Remember, you don't know Natasha Kinski? Remember the 1982 snake poster? Everybody, we all had that one. Some people had that one. Malcolm McDowell from Clockwork Orange, John Hurd, and Annette O'Toole. And this is actually a remake of the 1942 film of the same name. And this is Paul Schrader's second film, I believe, after American Gigolo, which kind of has this kind of the same vibe. But what I like about this one is that it for me, it captures New Orleans in a way that I've never seen before. Mm. I mean, it was totally filmed on location, and they hit all of the landmarks, places that I would frequent. And this is 1982, so I just graduated high school. This is summer of 82. So I'm like sitting in the theater going, oh, I was just there, or I'm going to pass that way on my way home. And, you know, looking at all these different landmarks like the Ottoman Zoo, you know, the French Quarter. I mean, just everything about it, it just brings me back to the New Orleans that I grew up with. Now the storyline is a different story because it's a bit of a controversial topic.
Supernatural.
So it's supernatural and incest, stuff like that. I don't know. So it's a, you know, different topic.
I didn't think you were ready, but you are. I knew it when I saw you with him. Your whole body burns. Make love with me.
I'm not like you.
But other than that, being filmed in New Orleans and looking at that, I think that really captured the New Orleans that I remember as a kid. One of the two, and we'll talk about the other one a little bit later. I think you're going to bring that one up. But what are your thoughts on Cat People?
No. Isn't David Bowie involved in that somehow?
He did he and Giorgio Moroder did the title track, Putting Out the Fire with Gasoline.
And I've been putting out fire with gasoline.
So, yeah, so he did the theme song and Giorgio Moroder did the score.
It's got kind of a spooky feel to it. The whole movie is just feels so like you're all on edge the whole time.
Yeah. Yes. So
I think I saw that one back in the day. But
it's one of those where, you know, it comes on, I will watch it. So, and I don't think it gets played enough lately, but maybe because of the topic, I don't know. But I think if you want to see New Orleans in a way where it was in New Orleans that I remember, that's a good go-to for me.
Mm-hmm. And isn't Ruby Dee in it?
Ruby Dee is in it, yes. Yeah.
Yes, she's a voodoo woman.
Oh, Ruby.
Yeah. Yes, we miss Ruby.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good one for me.
Awesome. Thank you for bringing that up because I'd actually forgotten about that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Now, my next one is I wanted to first reference True Blood because you turned me on to that.
I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I want to do bad things with you.
I didn't end up watching the show because I didn't have cable, but you and I spent a night watching, I think, 2 or 3 episodes, and I was really enthralled with it. I just didn't have cable to follow up and watch it on my own. What was the name of that actor who played the bartender or whatever? And he went on to do some really good stuff.
Before he passed away. Nelson Ellis.
Yes.
Do you understand me?
Tip your waitress.
He was incredible actor. And in that role, I mean, okay, so True Blood, for those who may not remember, I don't think it was actually set in New Orleans, but it was in a Southern community that had like that New Orleans feel to it. Okay. And yeah, and he was gay, flamboyant, mm-hmm. short order cook in a restaurant that was run by a shapeshifter, which we don't find out till later that the guy who owns it is a shapeshifter who most often turns into a dog, a wolf, something like that. Mm. And the main character, she has these powers, which she later finds out that she is a fairy. Who her fairy essence is super attractive to vampires. And so the whole series is really about how vampires are mainstreamed into society and are trying to live side by side with humans in harmony. And True Blood is the name of the product that they subsist on, since they're not supposed to kill and attack and drink the blood of humans. So now they can buy a commercial blood product that keeps them alive. And so they can just drink their True Blood, which comes in a number of different flavors.
Okay.
You know, and survive. But of course, between the werewolves and the fairies and the witches and all these different creatures, everything just goes awry, which makes for great drama.
Mm-hmm. And Nelson, I think the character he played in the James Brown movie, Get On Up, I think he played Bobby Bird or Bobby, in yeah. that book.
Yep.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, just, you know, I really missed that. He did a few different things and you were just really watching him. And then all of a sudden he was gone. Very tragic.
It was tragic. Rest in peace, Nelson Ellis. Yep.
Yeah. But the real other one I wanted to bring up, and I won't spend a whole lot of time on it, which ties into Only by Name, your other pick, your last picture, is Monsters Ball, which starred Halle Berry, who won, you know, she became the first Black woman to win Best, you know, Female Actress Oscar.
I was a good one. I did every single thing I could I was really good
for that picture, which was also a very controversial. That's her and Billy Bob Thornton. She plays a woman who haphazardly falls in love with the man who was responsible for executing, you know, her husband. And so that was quite a screenplay that actually got turned down by most of the major companies, but it ended up getting done independently. And like I said, it was a very big thing for Halle. I think since that time period, she's done a couple of movies that I think were far more worthy of her winning an Oscar, you know, particularly Frankie and Alice, which I talk about all the time. I always want people to go and check that out. But yeah, Monsters Ball took place in New Orleans, and it was kind of a gritty side that was shown for Halle's character, which shocked a lot of people after she'd done all these, not necessarily glamorous, but things from Boomerang to, oh my goodness. I can't remember my girl's movies right now.
You're supposed to remember all her movies. Like,
not
come
up
on.
To that point. My favorite ones came after. But yeah, she'd done quite a few things that were pretty light. I guess my favorite before Monsters Ball was Babs. That's a crazy comedy that she did. But yeah, just a very interesting picture. And again, most notable for giving us the performance that gave us the first Black woman to win an Oscar for a female actress.
And that was kind of at the beginning of the Hollywood South and filming in New Orleans. And I know mm-hmm. that they use a lot of locals in that movie as well. So,
yeah.
So they were casting a lot of locals. So then a couple of that I know that are in that film. So.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing cool. that.
The glory of independent cinema. Go ahead and use yeah. those locals, man.
Right.
mm-hmm. Gonna go way back once more. Like, I love movies that are so full of pot boiler melodrama. They're so over the top and just crazy. And I don't think this movie got very many good reviews when it came out. It's a movie called Band of Angels from 1957. I don't think many people know or remember this movie. I feel like it's been buried on both Clark Gable and Sidney Poitier's list of movies. It's a film that both of them would prefer to forget, I think. Mm-hmm. But I just find it fascinating, like, especially if you compare it to another Civil War drama, which is Gone with the Wind. Okay, so Band of Angels, it's described as a psychological drama, but that's putting it mildly. It's set in the South before and during the Civil War, and Lily Munster, Yvonne DiCarlo, plays this young woman named Amantha Starr, and she's raised on a Louisiana plantation as a princess and the, you know, the apple of her rich father's eye. But when he dies, and she thinks she's going to inherit everything and be like the belle of the ball with all these suitors, she discovers that her mother was actually one of her father's slaves, and she is not legally able to inherit a thing. And in fact, all of her father's belongings are sold off, including her. She's sold to a slave trader, taken downriver to New Orleans, and sold on the block. Poor Yvonne DiCarlo. She's in a huge hall with her teeth being examined. And much as we've seen many Black slaves, you know, how they were sold on the block, and she's just totally humiliated. And then somebody is going to buy her. And then Clark Gable comes in and buys her for an incredible amount of money. And he's like a wealthy man about town whose valet is this haughty free man of color played by Sidney Poitier. So Sidney's character, he's grown. He's grateful to Clark Gable for educating him and protecting him in this mixed race town where slavery, you know, slavery is still a fact of life. And so many of the whites resent Sidney Poitier's character. But while Sidney is also grateful to Clark Gable, he also hates him kind of for keeping him emotionally enslaved in this town, right? And now he's got this new half white woman that he's bringing in. And you find out that Clark Gable himself had a slave lover, and this woman is literally welcoming Amantha into the household and telling her, okay, this is your new room, you're going to be the master's consort. And this Black woman is literally taking her belongings out of the room, like, okay, you're the new chick. And of course Amantha is like, oh no, I will never submit. Through the whole movie, everybody's trying to rape her, right? Everybody's trying to rape this woman. So we find out that Clark Gable is a former slaver himself. Like, he was in Africa and getting chattel slaves, and now he feels guilty about it, and he actually saved the Sidney Poitier character from chattel slavery and raised him. So of course Clark Gable and the Yvonne DiCarlo character end up falling in love. And so they end up having all these different adventures, and the Civil War starts, and Sidney Poitier leaves Clark Gable and winds up being a sergeant in the Union Army. And, you know, then he gets involved with saving Yvonne DiCarlo from all these untoward things that are happening to her as she kind of shifts between black life and white life. This movie is super crazy. Okay.
There's a lot going on.
Never mind what my name was. You talk about freedom. You think I've got freedom? I got a past I'd like to forget, but I can't get away from it any more than you can get away from what you are. Miss Yvonne DiCarlo and I have just played a scene from Band of Angels, Robert Penn Warren's bestseller. A story of colorful old New Orleans in the Deep South. Band of Angels is daringly unusual, boldly presented. Its emotions are violent, its passions primitive, its conflicts vigorous, fiery, explosive.
I'm getting out of here, come hell and brimstone, and you'll never see hide nor hair of me again.
So you join that Band of Angels.
Excuse me, Raru, if I don't shy too easily.
White soldiers are on their way here to get you right now, but I wanted the satisfaction of taking you in. Put those on.
You've just seen a few of the many exciting moments from Band of Angels.
It's a lot going on, but it's fascinating piece of history about slavery, about race, about how mixed race people are treated in this country, because we don't really see a lot of that on screen. And like I said, it got terrible reviews when it was released. You can watch it on Amazon Prime as a rental for $2.99. The title Band of Angels is what Clark Gable calls Sidney Poitier's all-black regiment in the Union Army. Like, your Band of Angels is going to come down to New Orleans and the South and free all the black people. Good luck with that. You know? And I think Sidney Poitier took the role because he wasn't playing a typical massa slave, but I think he definitely had reservations about playing this role. So if you see this movie, Band of Angels, on TV anywhere, I say watch it, because it's cuckoo. Yeah, I feel like it rivals Gone with the Wind. So
I've never even heard of it, so I'm definitely want to look it up and check it out.
Yeah, and Gable, again, he has this huge French Quarter home where you come into the beautiful outdoor courtyard with the palm trees and the liveried black servants coming and serving him cigars and brandy and everything and all his meals, and everybody's fawning over him, and it's New Orleans.
But it's amazing how much hasn't changed. I mean, I was there recently for the French Quarter Festival, and just walking around the French Quarter, and hadn't been there in a while, but looking around and describing the courtyards and all the scenery, right? I mean, it still looks the same as these old movies. It looks exactly the same.
And that's kind of what I love about the tradition of it, that it's lasted so long. And, you know, you can go into these restaurants, like I'm assuming the Court of the Three Sisters restaurant is still there.
The Court of Two Sisters.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It's still there.
I just love all that stuff.
It's still there. That part is still there.
Love it. Okay. Next on the list. Hey, 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 rock your way.
My earliest memory is 1973, I think it's 1973, Live and Let Die, James Bond.
Say live and let die.
Yeah, man.
I was old enough to remember my family talking about it And I just remember this whole buzz that I was like, what's going on? Everybody's like, oh, they're filming a James Bond movie. And I knew about James Bond's movies before that. But this one was different because it was filmed in New Orleans, and it's going to, you know, they're going to be here, and the crew, and Roger Moore is going to be in New Orleans. And, you know, this is just all this hype about it. It was much later when I got to see the film, even watching it later on, it did a great job capturing the essence of New Orleans from the beginning with the funeral in the French Quarter, and just the backdrops and where they shot on location. They did a really, really, really great job on that. And that's one of my favorites, just because I like the movie itself. It's a great movie, but also I can see a lot of New Orleans that I grew up with in that movie.
It's funny, when I first thought about New Orleans movies, I had that scene in my mind, but I couldn't remember which Bond movie it was from. So I kind of remembered it starts in New Orleans, but it doesn't stay in New Orleans.
But they go back. Yeah. And the boat chase, because my family, they're all fishermen. And they all love boats. So the boat chase for us was like, that was just great. And of course, everybody in my family wanted to race their boats and jump the marshes and stuff like that. So, you know, it was a big deal in my family, that movie, because we were doing a lot of the same things and had a lot in common with that movie.
And it was a big deal for the city.
It was at the time. Yes, at the time. It was, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of films that you mentioned, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, but I think that one felt a little different for us.
It had black people. Okay.
I mean, a little different.
James Bond has to deal with black people. Okay.
No, there were a couple though. He dealt with black people before. Like one movie in Jamaica, and then there was another one with Grace Jones later after Live and Let Die. Mm-hmm. So the black presence repeated, but there was definitely gaps in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when they opened the slat on the coffin, what came out? I forget, but it wasn't a body. I was horrified. Yeah.
But Jeffrey Holder is just like, he steals the film for me. I love Jeffrey.
Love him.
Oh, yeah. He's the best. And that's the one with Solitaire, where Jane Seymour.
Yes. Jane Seymour, Yaphet Kotto.
Yaphet Kotto. That's who I can remember. Oh, my goodness. Yaphet Kotto.
He played Kananga.
Yes, he was like the ultimate villain. Yes, I remember. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay.
Pulled that one out too.
Yeah. Yep.
I think I have a box set of James Bond movies. I have several freestanding, but there's a DVD box set, and I believe that one is in the box set, so I'm going to have to check that out. Come on, you're singing, hey, 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 hey. My last two movies, I'm going to put them together because they're both kind of a travel motif in different ways. And they're both fairly recent. Girls Trip.
Girls, you know you got those friends. The ones that got your back. The ones that keep it real. We haven't hung in 5 years. We need a girls trip.
It's the first one where we get, you know, a black female ensemble comedy where they take a vacation to New Orleans and proceed to just really cut up Jada Pinkett, Queen Latifah. It's the real major introduction of our girl.
Tiffany Haddish.
Regina
Hall, not King. Regina
who's an
Hall.
Incredible actress.
Yes, but she gets to have some fun in this one. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. You know, that was just great, you know, to have that kind of a movie ensemble black cast of women on vacation. I mean, we had things before like Set It Off which were more gritty and whatnot, but that one, it was just really a laugh fest. It's hard to get me to like really laugh a lot out loud at a movie. But that one, particularly Tiffany, oh my God, I hope she comes out with some more stuff that's that funny, because I actually started going to see a lot of the subsequent things that she did. And I mean, you know, her personal life had been such that she didn't have much money. So I think she took almost anything that was offered to her. And subsequently, I went to see a lot of movies that were kind of underwhelming. But Girls Trip was great all the way around. Again, a lot of great locales, which is a great party place and a great place that you can set up scenarios that are hilarious.
And a great promotion for the Essence Festival as well.
which is coming up again. Yes. July 4th weekend is still a party place. It's still a fun place.
No doubt. And then the other one is a lot more historical piece that taught a lot of us, or just showed us a lot more about how Blacks traveled in the dangerous past. And that was Green Book.
I'm a musician. I'm about to embark on a concert tour in the Deep South. What other experience do you have?
Public relations.
Do you foresee any issues in working for a Black man?
You and the Deep South, there's going to be problems.
Which has a very big part of it, not all of it, because it deals with the country, but that is set in New Orleans. And Green Book was, it was just really a history lesson. It showed us a lot about the travails of how we had to maneuver.
In the segregated South during the 40s and 50s and even up to the 60s.
That's right. That's right. And to know that we had our own little travel guide that told us where to go, where we could stay, where we could eat, what hours of the day. Is this a place that you can really safely travel through at night, or do you need to have your butt in by 7 o'clock before sundown? A really nice historical piece for all generations. I mean, I learned things from it, but I think a lot of younger folks, it was a real wake-up call about it. And not so much the slavery with, like the real, that hardcore gritty thing. No, this was not that long ago. And this is how our people had to maneuver and survive and move across this country, because we sure did. I mean, we're everywhere. But that Green Book and the navigation of it is a big part of how we got to so many different places.
And Mahershala Ali, who is the star of it, he was just really incredible. He's an incredible actor anyway, and just portraying a real life pianist who was brilliant. But just also, it didn't matter how brilliant he was or any other Black person, how accomplished, how well-bred, how much money they made. If you went into the South, you had to safeguard your well-being from angry white folks and sundown towns and all of that. Like all the Motown artists that we know so well, they all had to deal with that touring the
Big
South.
Time.
Yeah.
Big time. Live and Let Die was on my discard. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Tony, and just other things that New Orleans has popped up in, from Easy Rider to
Let's Do It Again.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby, Sidney Poitier. Let's do it again. Another good one.
And on my list was Interview with the Vampire, which was an adaptation of an Anne Rice novel about two vampires from the 1700s on to modern times. But I'm not going to dwell on that. That movie came out in 1994, but I want to focus on another Anne Rice project that was not a movie, but a mini series from 2001. Mm. Called The Feast of All Saints, based on 1979 novel by the Queen of New Orleans supernatural fiction, Anne Rice. This novel doesn't feature any vampires or witches, but instead it explores the New Orleans of the 1840s and the people known as gens de couleur libre, or free people of color, and also the practice of placage, which was where wealthy white male landowners regularly and openly had mistresses of color. They could have been married to a white woman and had a million children, but they also had their mixed race mistresses with whom they had children, and they raised and supported and educated those children as well.
The quadroon balls at the Salle d'Orleans were a tradition as old as the city itself. They were elegant in form. They were where white men came to meet women of color.
Quadroons, you say?
Quarter African blood, most of them. Some more, some less.
Dazzling.
It's all quite formal. They're chaperoned by older women, mothers, aunts, grandmothers. They size you up, decide if you have the means to keep them in style.
Matchmakers.
Very capable businesswomen. They guard their assets like the crown jewels.
Extraordinary.
It's called passage. Promises, rituals, and long-term means. You won't see one of these beauties alone until you've set them up.
So the story centers on a young man who, even though he was blonde and blue eyed, his features, he couldn't pass, but he had a sister who could pass for white. And so the story tells what happens to them in this society. And this is a piece of New Orleans lore and American history that has long been hidden and suppressed. Like, people don't really know about it. They don't necessarily talk about it. But this was happening for years. It happened in France as well, where married men conducted long-term affairs and had children with mistresses. But it was in America where it was specifically with women of color in New Orleans. So the miniseries had James Earl Jones, Forrest Whitaker, Ossie Davis, Ruby Dee, Eartha Kitt, Pam Grier, Ben Vereen, Jasmine Guy, Jennifer Beals, Robert Richard, Gloria Rubin, Peter Gallagher, Daniel Sunjata, and Beyonce's half-sister by marriage now, Bianca Lawson. This was an incredible project, and I need to see it again because it was just wonderful.
You had me at Jennifer Beals, Pam Grier, and Jasmine Guy. So now I have to watch it.
And Gloria Rubin. You said Gloria Rubin?
Gloria Rubin has a major role in it.
So now I have to watch it.
And
Eartha Kitt.
Yes.
I mean, there's one that it's not about New Orleans, but I watched it and I recognized a lot of landmarks in this film, and that was Looper. I don't know if you remember Looper with Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
who's an incredible actor.
Yes.
And it's set in the future.
Right. But they don't talk about where it's set, but it's filmed entirely on location in New Orleans. So I'm looking at this film going, I know that, and I know that, and I know that. Oh. So that was very interesting for me. I mean, the film was good, and I got wrapped into the film, but I also got wrapped into the location where it was filmed. And I think maybe I was the only one in the theater who recognized a lot of these sets.
In the animated world, we also had the Disney picture, The Princess and the Frog. Mm-hmm. And the other one that I was looking at was a Denzel Washington movie called Deja Vu.
And then we have the HBO series, Tremé.
Of course.
Yes.
Hanging in Tremé, watching people sashay, past my steps, by my porch, in front of my door.
I love how these folks that are, you know, that they film in New Orleans, are these New Orleans themed films. They do such a great job capturing it, you know, and I know they really go above and beyond in their research. I'm really happy about that. They don't try to sugarcoat it or kind of fabricate it. They really go really into it and be very truthful to the city and its culture.
Yeah.
And I think because it's so colorful and so just, you know, it's a character unto itself in any movie or any story that it's placed in, that you don't want to sugarcoat it. If you're going to go to New Orleans, you're going there for all that flavor, you know,
right?
A pun intended, you know.
Yes.
So, gentlemen, I really want to thank you. This was a fun conversation. I enjoyed it. And I don't know when I'm going to get back to New Orleans, but I can't wait to go back. And I want to thank you for your contributions to the Words on Flick show. This was fabulous.
You know you have a tour guide already built in. So whenever you're ready, let me know. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Janine. It's always a pleasure.
Play for that money, boys. Play for that money.
Hey, I hope you had fun listening to our chat, our little tour of New Orleans movies with my dear friends Scott and Tony. It was great having them on, and it was a lot of fun listening to the music. I can't wait to go back. I hope you would consider going to Blog Talk Radio and the eWater Radio family of podcasts and subscribe so you'll never miss the Words on Flicks show. And I look forward to seeing you for another show next month. And in the meantime, keep watching out. Bye-bye. Take care.